This week on the Indo Daily.
I actually don't believe, right, that priests had her out of any harm. He just, like, thought I knew. But that's how I found out Miriam Martina was dead.
How likely is it that Trump will be found guilty of paying hush money to former adult film star Stormy Daniels?
We're talking about involvement in serious drugs activity on both sides of the border, and as well as that, the procurement of weapons.
Find and follow us at all the usual spots, and over on the Irish Independent website.
This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920, there's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
Mateo, O'Driscoll, Horgan, extra man, it's Fitzgerald. Oh, Fitzgerald is cutting back inside! Leicester have another! Darcy, O'Driscoll through the legs, Rob Carney out to Fitzgerald again, step and score, number two for him.
Hello and welcome to the Left Wing Independent.ie's rugby podcast. I'm Will Slattery, delighted to be joined in studio, as always, by Luke Fitzgerald. Luke, hello.
William, how are you?
On your phone, putting it away, turning
just
it on silent.
Just putting it away, just saying a little thank you. I'm good, Will.
You've delivered with a bumper guest. On a Champions Cup week of all weeks, so fair play to for coming on. We're going to be joined by Munster and Ireland star Tyghbirne in just a few minutes.
Yeah, excited to have him on. You know, one of the good guys, actually. We went through a very difficult patch, actually at a very similar time. I had a bad groin injury, and he also had the same thing. And I suppose he was probably earlier in his career than myself. He was kind of in the academy at the time. Difficult for Leinster to justify sending him to... I went into, you know, End of Kings. He has a I don't know what you call it, I suppose a gym, really, and a fairly high-tech setup out in Santry. So I went out there. It's where Johnny Sexton went, it's where Ian Madigan went with the groin stuff. It's really, really top-quality stuff now. But they spent, I was 3 weeks out there. I was the guinea pig, really. But Tyke, I suppose, wasn't really at the level where they
were. Well, you were the highly paid prima donna who needed to be kept happy.
But that was it. Well, I was going to retire, to be honest. It was the last throw of the dice for me. So yeah, look, he's a really, really good guy. He's still young, had come back from an unbelievable stint over in the Scarlets, and has kicked off, I think, where he left off, I suppose, in Scarlets in Munster. And I think they're building quite nicely. I know they had a bit of a struggle on the weekend, so did Leinster. But I think he's a really good bit of business for them. I think he's like a missing link for them. Mm. I think he's like an extra ball carrier. I think he's the extra little bit of handling that they need. I've been kind of
harping on that. Such an all-rounder. Like he has so many skills. I think it is maybe down to his GA background because he's a great ball handler as well. You know, he is.
But he's just a natural footballer. He looks like a guy who appreciates space. Plus, he's tough as all boots. Like he can hang himself, Pete O'Mahony. You know, when Tommy O'Donnell's there, and Cloyta as well, like on the ground, they're fearsome there. They just stay in on the ball for ages. They get you turnover after turnover. So I think he's a really, really good bit of business for Munster, you know.
And before we bring in Tyke and discuss his career, just quickly over the weekend, you know, you had Munster beating Cast, you had Ulster with a really great win against the Scarlets. And I have to hold up my hands after last week. I kind of said, have they really been that much better this season? Fully, mea culpa, it was a great performance, their best win in years probably, and then you had Leinster, you know, getting the job done against Bath. Like, what stood out to you across those three games?
I think the Ulster one stood out. Yeah, look, it's not often I get it in right, Will, but we have to call games because it's a bit of fun.
Yeah.
People like to, you know, have you hang your hat on something. But sport's so difficult to make a call on these things. It's really fine margins. But I suppose I stand over the point I made last week, and that I think they have made some strides. I think they're winning some of the ones that they would have lost in previous years. I think they're still going to be maybe a little bit away from winning something this season, but I think they're going to be in the mix, actually.
If they get out of their group, that's a huge result for them.
Massive result. And they're well capable of doing it now. They're very difficult to beat in Ravenhill. So, that was the one that stood out to me. I think the Leinster one was a gritty win. I thought they made a mistake. They've got this mindset, which I think has worked well for them, going to the corner. They got lucky. They got another shot at goal, which Ross Byrne, by the way, cool head on. Like he's just, I think he's a class player. I think he's got, like, he's a bit to go to get to the Johnny Sexton level, but the more I see him, the more I like him. I don't know about you, Will. What did you think?
Yeah, well,
I
mean, ever since he came into this podcast, I've liked him a lot better since then.
But I was really impressed with him. I was really impressed with all the bench that came on. They made an impact in the Leinster game. I thought Bath could have done better. I thought they had Leinster under the pump. I thought the weather was a real leveller. I thought Bath actually were a bit more aggressive defensively, and Leinster got no momentum in the tight exchanges. They were really, really good there.
On days like that, you just have to get out with the win. You know, you know it's not going to be maybe a bonus point win or a high scoring game. You just need to get the win and move on, because there's other games down the road that are, you know, hugely important.
Yeah, big time.
Because I lost yesterday with Toulouse's win, or I lost on Saturday rather with Toulouse winning. You know, Leinster would have been really under the pump. So the result was the most important thing, I guess.
It was. No, look, and it was great to see them grind one out. Munster one was a bit more kind of plucky. I think they, like, will they? I saw all the talk in the media about will they regret not getting the bonus point.
To lose Carberry and Farrell to injuries, though, you know,
right before
bizarre.
Kickoff, yeah. Very difficult. I mean, and a lot of your, like, they're the first guys, oftentimes, bar your nine, but they're the first guys that kind of connect your game plan from what's going on the inside. So when your forwards are kind of bashing and they're making yardage, you know, to change the link between the forwards and the backs, you know, especially because a lot of your moves will be done around a guy like Farrell, who's actually a nice passer of the ball as well. But he's a big guy, so he's kind of a focal point for them as well. That was big changes very late. So I actually thought they adapted well enough. I think it took them a while to figure it out in the first half, but they're better in the second half. You know, next week becomes really important for them, doesn't it?
But I guess when you're thinking about the missed opportunity for that bonus point, like, I can't even remember the last time someone won a Champions Cup or a Heineken Cup without having that home quarterfinal, home semi-final, you know what I mean? Like that one point could be very crucial to come the end of it. When you have a cast team that, how interested were they? They were pretty poor, let's be frank.
Yeah.
The reason I ranked them so lowly in my opening 25 or my opening 20, those one pointers here and there can be very crucial at the end when they're all being tottled up.
Yeah, they're never great, are they? In the they're plucky away from, they're, you know, they can hang around for 30 minutes away from home, but they don't seem to have it's kind of annoying having them in the competition a little bit, because I don't really think they take it that seriously, you know.
That was my argument. They won the top 14 last year, so they're obviously a good side. Not saying they're not, but they don't take Europe as seriously.
It's silly though, isn't it? Like, I mean, I think from their own perspective, like, I suppose, look, they've got relegation is what they're always going to say. They seem to be a team that come late to, like, were they top? I don't know if they were in top, were they last year in top 14?
Well, they came to like fifth or sixth.
Yeah, but they've done that. I think the last time they went, remember when they had Max Evans and all the team? Yeah. I think they were the same.
They're always very good at turning people over in France.
I presume their point is probably like, well, all the people in the top six are probably in, you know, Champions Cup, and they're playing their best teams. We're not going to do that, and that's probably where they're able to hang around. And
they wouldn't have the depth of squad that a Clermont would have or a Toulon would have either.
So look, we get the argument on Cass, but like, look, moving on, it's annoying that they don't seem to really take the competition seriously, because I think it is the pinnacle, and it's a bit of a shame. Like, I think, you know, for me, I'm just hoping Munster isn't going to be one of those ones where they're regretting that, you know, the Exeter game as well, where they could have come away with something there.
That was a good draw at the start.
Team would take a draw going to Sandy Park. There's just no, like,
they're out now, basically, you know. They got pumped by Gloucester at home, basically, you know. I couldn't believe that, watching that.
Yeah, so look, it's a tricky one, you know. So look, bit of work to do for Munster.
Last question before we bring on Tadhg Byrne. It was just a point Rory O'Connor, our independent colleague, raised in a column earlier today, saying that Leinster don't look as good at this juncture that maybe they were last year, or that we were expecting them to look, certainly after that opener against Wasps. So I think that's a bit premature to say. I know they struggled against Bath and against Toulouse, but I still think they're a quid above everyone. But are they struggling a bit to defend their title?
No, it's I'm surprised at that observation. You think of the people they're missing. You know, that makes a big, big difference. You know, Robbie Henshaw, like, just such a good rugby player. Like, like, he's so fit. You know, his fight, his carry, you know, I think his ball handling has improved immeasurably, and he's a good playmaker with Leinster. He's a guy Leinster really miss. I think they're missing Fergus McFadden as well. They're missing Sean O'Brien. They're missing Jack Cohen, who's only just coming back from injury. They're missing Jack McGrath. You know, that's usually the last 20 minutes of a game. Like, even though they have lots of depth, and they do, and you saw how good James Tracy was, you know, when he came on for Sean Cronin as well. They do have the strength in that, but just they're still down a few bodies. Rory O'Loughlin's only just back from injury. They're missing missing quite a few guys, you know. So I'd be cautious on that one. I think, remember, Leinster have come back in. They would have had 20 guys maybe, or was it 20 guys involved in November, maybe more?
At least.
Let's be cautious on that one. I think they look really, really strong. You'd say that they, you know, a good few of them would have had a week off and would have been very heavily involved in November. I'd expect them to be very strong this week against Bath.
You're judging them against their own standards, like a 50-point win against Wasps, winning every single game last year in the Champions Cup, Only the second team to ever do that and win the tournament. So they're very lofty standards to match year on year.
They are, but look, I suppose the loss against Toulouse will have, I'm hoping, have taught them something. I think they could be smarter at times. I think there's a bit more in them that way. It's interesting to hear them always talking about, you know, even after pumping teams with 50 points in the Pro 14, they're kind of like, there's more in us. I think there actually is more in them. I think they've been a little bit sloppy at times this year. They can be a little bit careless. Sometimes it works really well where, you know, they seem to be able to turn the match on a big moment and then they're just unstoppable. But there's moments against some teams where it isn't. You know, like Toulouse was a case in point for me. Like, there was two intercept tries in that game because they were a little bit careless. They kind of, maybe you can take it for granted that you're going to steamroll over a team. They still could have won that one. That's how good they are, I think. But I think they're still the team to beat. I would suggest that, you know, there could be a little bit of tiredness there. I think they've been a little bit unlucky with injuries as well. I mean, they can't pick Fardy. I mean, I saw how good Fardy was in those two games, the Ospreys and the Dragons game. He was on, like, that try he got. I mean, I got slagged to bits from the Air Sport guys, but the driving maul try that they got against the Dragons. Did you see, like? No, seriously, how smart is Fardy? Like, he was at the front of the mall, he slipped out of the front of the mall on the right, just goes over on his own out to the wing, and then they throw the ball over the top to him. I was just thinking,
a lovely pass as well.
Yeah, it was a lovely pass, but like, how smart a player. Like, every other six is like running around the corner, going, I gotta work harder. That guy's like, no, there's gonna be, now the Leinster made a break, but I was just thinking, smart. Like, so he's a guy they haven't been able to play, and he was a big part of what I thought made Leinster tick last season. So I think there's more in them to get in a very long roundabout way. I'd be surprised if they didn't get better as the competition goes on. I expect them to win well this weekend, actually.
Well, a lot to look forward to this weekend and a lot to look forward to with our guest this evening as well. Delighted to be joined on the line by Ireland and Munster second row Tadhg Byrne. Tadhg, thanks so much for joining us.
No worries at all. Good to be on.
And you've had such an interesting journey over the last few years, from leaving Leinster to go to the Scarlets to winning the Pro 12 to coming back to playing for Munster, getting your Ireland caps. But I think I want to start with a statistic I saw earlier that I found very interesting, that in just four Ireland games, you've scored 3 tries, leaving you just 1 try behind Luke Fitzgerald's all-time tally of 4 tries in his international career. So, Ty, that's some going.
Yeah, look, I've been lucky enough to cross 3 times, but... look, I think Luke probably played some first class.
You don't have to be saying, man. Honestly, you could just call it like you see it.
A very diplomatic answer by Tadhg there, I thought.
Very diplomatic indeed. Very, thank you. I appreciate that, by the way. Listen, it's great to have you on. Yeah, we were excited about this one for a while. I know we were close enough to doing it a while ago, but look, we may as well start from the start. I mean, how's life down in Munster? How are you getting on down there?
Yeah, it's been great. Look, I'm settling in well, and you know, it was an adjustment at the start. You know, we've gone from adjusting to Welsh way of life, and then you're coming back home. I'm closer to home, closer to your parents and family, and which is great. And that was a big part of coming home too. But so far so good. Really enjoying it. And after a few weeks, I feel like I've settled in well to the way of rugby as well, so yeah, going good.
And Ty, was it a bit of an adjustment, I guess, for yourself coming back into Munster as one of the, I guess, you know, senior players, and maybe not senior players in the Munster dressing room per se, but you know, you're coming in on a transfer with a bit of expectation. I guess last time you would have been in the Irish setup, you would have been an academy player with Leinster and just try to even get in a few minutes of game time, whereas this time around you're kind of expected to contribute from the very start. Like, what was that like for you coming back in?
Yeah, it was a bit different. So I was going over to Scarlets. It was, I think, the trend under my Twitter announcement was more, who is this guy? I'm back here. I obviously had a bit of press going into the semi-final final in my first year, and then obviously getting my first Irish cap. So it was a bit different in that perspective.
And how did you find, so the move across, I mean, everyone always asked me about like, did I play with you and all that kind of stuff in Leinster. And I was saying, actually, it was really unusual because myself and Ty had the same injury. I had an injury, that 13-month groin injury, but you had the same thing at the same time. And, you know, obviously, like, Ty was an up-and-comer, but he was only in the academy, really, at that stage. Or were you on the development map, possibly, at that stage? And what were you on? Were you on academy?
I was still academy, yeah. I was second year academy when I first happened, got into my last year.
Yeah, I feel pretty ill now. But we had the same injury at the same time. And I remember saying, like, to anyone who was asking me, when you started off in Scots and you started kind of, I suppose, hitting your straps a little bit and coming into your own, I remember people saying, what's he like? What was he like? How did Leinster let him go? And I said, you don't understand. We both had the same injury. So I nearly retired with the thing. And you weren't on a little bit, like, you kind of got back, but weren't, you never really got back, I thought, fully like you see the athlete you are now. But it took a long time for you to get back, and I suppose you only really started figuring it out probably over in the Scarlets, did you?
Well, I suppose, yeah, I do remember that frustration period. Like, I think, I don't know if you remember, but I remember calling over to your house.
I remember it well, I remember it well.
My head was gone at that stage. You'd been over to Santry and gotten a few weeks over there with over there on that program where
with Enda King, yeah,
Enda King, yeah. Whereas Leinster refused to send me over.
I was over there with pina coladas and a straw hat, and you were stuck out in UCD.
Exactly. So my rehab programs just hadn't been working up to that point, unfortunately. It was just kind of, it was one of those injuries that they weren't really that sure on at the time, and it kind of almost needed a specialist to come in and sort it. And by chance, Leinster ended up recruiting one of the physios from there, and he came in and he more or less had me back running within 6 weeks, which was massive for me. And then obviously over the next few months, I kind of found my feet again, and kind of didn't know myself, but I did pick up a few knocks on my shoulders as well that final year in academy. So I never really kind of got up to my my own kind of standards that I'd set for myself even. Which just was pretty frustrating.
Yeah, I guess, Ty, when you do look back on that period at Leinster, because people are so interested in the story and the player you've become, would you say that it was the injuries that was maybe the reason you didn't get noticed at the time by the coaching staff? Or do you kind of look at the way you're playing now and think, this was always there, they should have seen it?
Not really. I think that the injury definitely was a big point and not really making it, you know. I think in that year about three people had passed me out, where, you know, like my first year in the academy, I was starting that final in the B&I Cup, and I was on a good progression, and I think I was starting and calling the lineouts in the second year up to the point where I got injured, and then for the next obviously 14 months I was out, and like Sir Ross Maloney, Gav Thornbury, and passed me out, and then they ended up signing Mick Carney at the end of that, my second year in the academy. So it was going to be a pretty uphill battle for me then to kind of get a look in, because I didn't have much ground to stand on in terms of getting game time there, especially with the A's. I was kind of coming off the bench if I was playing.
Talk to us a little bit about your time in Scarlets, really, and I suppose finding your form and finding that little bit of, I suppose, figuring your body out so you could get on the pitch and show what a player you were. Was that a big move? I mean, like, how strange was it going over to a new environment? Because you came straight out of school into the Leinster sub-academy, I suppose, and then into academy, yeah?
Yeah, it's a weird one, really, because you kind of look at a few people and you'd almost encourage them to maybe leave, and it's about, you don't really want that in the Irish system, and you want to keep them where they are, but you become so tunnel visioned growing up that, like, I couldn't see outside Leinster. I wouldn't even probably considered any other province. I just wanted to make it in Leinster, and if I didn't make it in Leinster, then I was almost no use. But as you get older, you kind of can start to see the bigger picture, and taking the risk was obviously a scary thing, but one I didn't live to regret, thankfully.
And when you were over there, so did you have a conversation with Wayne Pivac before you went over?
They invited me over to kind of, I think, more or less look at me and weigh me up, really, to see what kind of a bloke I was. I sat down with all of them, and they took me around the stadium and had a chat with them, and they just wanted to see what I was like, really. And I had a chat, and they kind of told me what they were hoping to achieve in the next 2 years, and we achieved one of the goals anyway.
Yeah, I mean, look, your time there was, in fairness now, I've got to say, so impressive to watch from afar. And again, as you mentioned there, I had been keeping a bit of an eye on you anyway, considering what we'd, I suppose, been through at the same time with the injuries and that. So yeah. It was great to see. But talk to us a little bit about, this is kind of just a thought I had, because I was kind of interested as I was asking it, about Wayne Pivac and what he's been able to do with the Scarlets. And I suppose he's going on to be the Wales coach as well. So what was he like to work with? It seemed like your game came on, even as you were a good player going over, it came on leaps and bounds with him.
Yeah, he's different to anyone I've probably ever had before, and just the culture in Scarlets would have been a lot different to what I would have been used to in Leinster as well, and I think that had a massive effect on the way we played as well as a group. We were quite tight coming into those final few months, and he played a big role in kind of making that group what it was in terms of getting them a lot closer, and he's got a really good way with people, and yeah, I'd have a lot of time for him, I'd have to say.
And Stephen Jones obviously is someone who's very highly rated as well in that setup, and people I think are expecting him maybe to go on to the Welsh setup too. What can you tell us about him? Is he a really good driver of those skills that the Scarlets have been so good at, and you've been really good at too?
Yeah, when I went in, they'd all come back from they'd all been away in New Zealand and Australia and different parts, kind of seeing the way they kind of did things. And he was one of the guys who came back and had a big focus on just the simple things in rugby, just such as their catch pass, and we did a lot of that, and every single day that was kind of drilled into us. And with Wayne Pivac, they had like a vision of the way they wanted to attack and the shape they wanted to bring, and he drove that, and he was quite impressive. He's a really enthusiastic coach, and he's another guy who just kind of brings out the best in a lot of players.
Yeah, he was on, you like this one, Ty. I played in the Lions with him way back. Yeah, Jonesy, yeah. I mean, look, he was such a nice player, like a nice guy. But
such a nice guy, isn't he?
Yeah, and like a serious rugby knowledge. So I can imagine, like, it is important when your coaches are, like, I know Joe Schmidt is a person who's very tough, but you still love playing for him. I think you have to have that. Like, I mean, it seems like people like that, while the player group are, if you're friendly with them, you need to have a few people, and it seems like Pivac and Stephen Jones just seem to be guys who you'd want to play for. Is that like, that's what I thought looking from a distance anyway.
Yeah, big time. It's kind of, the way they just coach was enjoyable, I suppose. It just made rugby fun, because there's such a focus on ourselves more than the opposition that we could kind of go out and express ourselves a little bit and just enjoy the way we're playing rugby, I guess. And I think that was the kind of style that they brought, and the coaching style they brought.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear you say earlier that when you were a younger player, you were very tunnel visioned about making it at Leinster and being part of that team and that culture. Because I guess the Leinster culture is very well defined. A lot of the players come from quite a small area, in South Dublin, near around the Donnybrook area. Like, how did you find that in contrast with what Scarlets was like? Because I know the Welsh rugby culture will be a lot different maybe to what we're used to over here. Like, how did you find that?
Growing up, I suppose when I say tunnel vision, like I didn't touch rugby well really until I was in Clongowes, and that whole Leinster Schools Cup, you kind of come up through that system. So it's all about Leinster, isn't it? And they were obviously so successful as well. So you feel like if you can make it in Leinster, you'll be successful. But the whole environment there, like, I'm not, the environment's great because they obviously win silverware and all that. It's just a different type of environment, I guess. It was I suppose Leinster would probably put a bit more pressure on themselves to be very successful, whereas Scarlets have that pressure, but kind of do it more so in terms of enjoyment, in terms of the rugby, I suppose.
I'd say there's a lot of similarities, is there, between, just sorry off the top of my head here, but I'd say there's quite a few similarities between, say, the support in Limerick and the support over in Wales. Is there, like, I always think there's like a real, because, I mean, you know, I'd say most people would consider, you know, Limerick to be the traditional home, really, of Irish rugby. I mean, everyone in Limerick plays, no matter what your background is. It's not private schools. It's just everyone plays rugby down there. And I'd say it's quite similar to Wales. Do you find that yourself?
Yeah, that's definitely something I've found since coming here. Would have been the fans would be quite similar in terms of their, especially during terms of their passion, like. Coming into European week, especially, you kind of see it more than the Pro 14 weeks, I suppose, just because there's probably such an emphasis on it, and it was like that as well in Scarlets, how passionate the Scarlets fans were, and you could kind of feel it going into these games as well, and the noise they'd make, especially even on away days. And it's very much similar here in Munster.
And talk about the so you've started off in Munster now. You seem, as you said yourself, you're up to speed. You've kind of got the game plan down. You feel like you're growing into your own. You have a role there. Talk to us a little bit about the journey that's I suppose brought you to there, and what I suppose the conversation was like when you made the decision to come over. Was it kind of Joe Schmidt directed, or was it Van Graan, or who was the person that really I suppose maybe locked it in for you? Because things were going well in the Scarlets. It's tough sometimes to make a change when things are going well.
Yeah, I think I did have a phone call from Joe, and there was a bit of chat to and from in regards, but the decision was really down to myself, and it was a lot of it was based on if I felt it was good enough to wear green or not, and it came down to the fact that I felt like I could give it a go, and there was potential there for me to play for Ireland, and I knew myself from day one of going to Scarlets that the way it worked was if I was over there, I was never really going to play for Ireland. But I suppose when I was going over there, that wasn't really high on my list. It was more just to make a career in rugby. So be in the position more or less a year and a half on, where I had the possibility of coming home to play for Ireland. It was probably something I couldn't not turn down and take a risk.
Yeah, Tyke, if I had told you the day you were about to sign that Scarlets deal, what would happen over the next couple of years, would you have been completely shocked? Would you have thought, oh, that's a possibility? Like, where would your head have been at?
I don't think I would have believed it, really. I kind of... At the stage of me signing, I kind of felt I was going over almost as a squad player, and I was kind of thinking to myself, if I play well enough and I could sneak in now and get a few benches in my first year and we'd go from there. But to go from being on the bench in the first three games and then I got dropped, I thought that was more or less it for me, so... My next opportunity, I more or less started every game after that. So it was kind of a bit surreal to think years on, and I'm wearing green, for sure.
Was there one moment in that first season with the Scarlets where you felt everything was coming together and you just maybe even thought to yourself, geez, actually, things are going pretty well here, like even way better than I thought they could?
Yeah, I belong. I think, you know, when you're kind of at that level, like you have to, sometimes it can take a while. I know myself, when I first started, it takes a while for you to have that moment where you're kind of like, I actually belong here. I'm better than these guys, or I belong here. Do you know? Did you have that kind of feeling after a few games?
It probably wouldn't have been until maybe after Christmas, until I suppose I kind of felt like I'd merited my starting position, I guess. There was a lot of luck involved in terms of me getting my first couple of starts. To then eventually I got to a stage where they were selecting me because I deserved to be there. And once I kind of felt that, I suppose you then feel like you more belong to be playing for that team then.
And was there like a big night? Was there a European game or something like that, or a match against Munster or Leinster or Glasgow or something where you said, you know what, they're whatever, the best in the league, I came up against, or even a player you came up against and you said, you know what, I got the better of that guy tonight? Was there anyone like that you kind of said, geez, I actually feel like I'm really comfortable here now and I'm going to get better?
I'd say probably the Toulon game at home.
I was thinking yourself and Ken Owens were unbelievable. Was that the home game?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
That one. I kind of felt I came off that pitch. I was like, I felt I played well, and it kind of gave me an extra kind of, I suppose, burst of confidence then going on from there in terms of playing well. Like, I suppose confidence in their ability then, and you're not kind of second guessing yourself going into games like you were, especially at the start when you're kind of getting your first start, and that you're kind of thinking about everything twice before you do anything in case it's the wrong thing. But once you kind of find your feet a bit, you have the confidence then to just play the way you feel you should be playing.
And Ty, what was that week like at the end of your first season with the Scarlets, where in back-to-back weeks you come back to Dublin, play Leinster at the RDS in the semi-final, Scarlets are huge underdogs, you win that game, you play really well, you come back the following week, you're underdogs again against Munster at the Aviva, you play really well again, you win the Pro 12, and I remember seeing photos of you after both of those games and you had such a big smile on your face. Like, did it feel like a bit of vindication?
I suppose a little bit it did, yeah. There's a lot of hype around it as well, coming back, especially going back to Leinster, and coming out of that game was pretty special, especially considering the circumstances of going down to 14 men, so like late in the first half. But coming out of that game was a special feeling, and I think when we overcame that, I don't think whoever you put in front of us the following week, they were going to be stopping us, to be honest.
And did you try to catch Leo Cullen's eye after the semi-final and just give him a look and say, hey, mate, you made a wrong decision there?
No, never.
You liar. And talk to us now about you've made the move across now in Munster, and looks like Van Grand's kind of building something nice. I think there's a few people coming back in the fall. Obviously, Chris Farrell's missing for next week from what we read. But Conor Murray's back in the setup. Joey Kirby hopefully will be back. Maybe not this week, but soon enough, hopefully. But like, it seems to me like something really good is building down there. There's lots of people who are at a point in their career where I kind of feel like Munster need to win something now. Peter Mahoney's at the height of his powers. CJ Stander, Keith Earls, all these guys. I mean, obviously you came back to try and get, pull on an Irish jersey. You've done that. But to get back in and to actually consistently get an Irish jersey on your back, I think Munster have to be playing well. Munster be playing week in, week out. Like, talk to us a little about the journey you're on there and maybe where you feel you're at the moment. Do you feel like you could be, I know it's early in the season, but obviously the ambition is very high in the squad.
Yeah, for sure. Came in here and we obviously came in pre-season a bit later and a lot of the boys had started, and we came in to a week's camp in Fota Island, and that was great to get to know a few boys. But between now and then, I suppose the atmosphere in the club is just kind of has a really good feel about it, and it just seems to be getting better and better. And at the start we weren't playing the way we were hoping to play, but I think as the weeks have been going on, we've been improving week on week, and I think there's a really good feel around camp, kind of training every day and all that. And I think the way Owen's kind of running it, it gives us we've good confidence going forward, and obviously the players that we have as well at the moment, kind of makes it a lot more exciting as well. And, you know, if we stick to the way we want to do things, I think we have a really good opportunity of hopefully winning some silverware this year.
And I'm always kind of interested to hear, sorry, this is probably a more personal question, I'm not sure all the listeners will love this one, but I'm really interested to see the likes of a Gerry Flannery and a Felix Jones, like young Irish coaches. I'm just really excited to see where they can get to. How have you found working with those guys? Because, I mean, they're not that much older than, well, they're not that much older than me, maybe. Felix is obviously my age, but they're probably a bit older than you now. But, I mean, talk to us a little bit about them. And I'm just interested to hear a view inside the camp. Do you feel like they're really bringing something? To me, just from having played with the two guys, I'd imagine them to be very technical. And I think they'd be guys you could learn a lot of.
Yeah, for sure. Like they bring a lot of energy to the way they want to do things, and which is fresh, refreshing, and I can't speak highly of them because you can just see how hard they both work in terms of what they're doing. They spend hours and hours going through footage and different ways we can attack teams. So It's hats off to them for the work they put in, because what they've been doing the last couple of weeks has definitely been working.
And so I just ask you a little bit about the off-field adjustment, I guess, that you've had to make over the last couple of years as you have become more prominent, you know, in the team, in various teams you've been playing in. Like, did you find it a bit bizarre that kind of almost overnight there was an increase in kind of coverage around you and how you were playing? And, you know, I know last year when you were at the Scarlets, there was like a campaign to get you into the Ireland squad as well. Like, did you find that a bit weird having come?
How much did you pay the campaigners?
But did you find that a bit strange, maybe having come from, you know, a couple of months previously where maybe a lot of people wouldn't have been too familiar with quite a big increase in coverage?
Yeah, I suppose you do kind of. It's not so much me, it's almost more your family be sending you on articles and all this kind of stuff, and you'd almost be trying to kind of not pay attention to it as much as you can. But I suppose that you kind of, my mum and my dad would be kind of getting excited about that kind of side of it more than I would, I guess. It's a bit surreal for me. It's probably coming from where I was 2 years before, but you know, I suppose it's just kind of comes with it when you start playing.
You were always Alana's brother. That's a, she was the famous one before you from the battle show.
She's still a lot more famous than me.
And here, talk to us. Both your folks were Gardaí, weren't they?
Yeah, they're not in the Guards. Right?
And like, how did you get into rugby? Is it like, was your dad playing rugby? Was your sports or?
No, it was I went and played with Nace because I wasn't allowed to play with my year in soccer back in sixth class, and I went and played with Nace, and I think it lasted about 2 months there, and I absolutely despised it. I didn't understand the rules. I had no time for it at all. But then obviously going into Clongowes, you're kind of forced to play in your first year, kind of just as a way of getting to know everyone in your year and just, I suppose, to do some exercise as well. With that, and then kind of looking up at the Senior Cup and all, you kind of start to fall in love with it. And you're kind of like, geez, I'd love to be one of those guys one day. And that's kind of what you aspire to first. And then as you get older, you kind of, as I got older, I started to watch rugby then, and I started to obviously follow Ireland first, and then kind of got in more into kind of watching Leinster and Munster and all that. So yeah, a bit of a late interest into it, I have to say.
And I always ask kind of players this whenever I get a chance. Who do you model your game on? Who was your, like, do you know when you're, so you said you got into the game late, but who are you watching week in, week out, and you're like, Jesus, that guy's unbelievable. Like, I love, or do you try and, I suppose you become your own player in a certain sense, but who did you try and model your game on to start with?
I can't really say I did, to be honest. I'd never really kind of watched that much rugby up until maybe third or fourth year. So I kind of just, I probably fancied myself as a back for the first 3 years.
So you're probably Draco or something, was it?
Yeah, thinking I should have been playing 10, like, so. I don't know, I probably didn't, not any specific player, no, I kind of just kind of was coached into the probably player I was, you know. I didn't really have a clue how to play the game, and obviously my years in Clongowes and then gone into Leinster, Lansdowne, and obviously onto Scarlett's, kind of, you just kind of, you learn as you go, don't you?
And I'm
still learning to this day.
Am I right in saying you played a good bit of GA when you were younger as well?
Yeah, GA would have been my kind of number one sport, really, because my dad would have been big footballer when he was younger, and he loves the GAA, so that probably would have been my number one sport up until probably third or fourth year. I was playing Kildare underages up until about under 16s, and then I think my mum and dad kind of decided the drive was a bit too much for them, driving out to Clongowes and then out to Kildare training, so I started to pack that in then, going into fourth year, I think.
Because I was actually thinking, against Gloucester a couple of weeks back, you made a breakdown field, you had many to the side, and you just let out this almighty hoof down the field. And I was thinking, that's a man who used to play GA when he was younger.
That's a cultured right foot.
That was on my bad foot, that's why it was so bad.
You shouldn't have a bad foot.
Options to the left, options to the right.
Yeah, exactly. Well, look, isn't it funny though? I mean, I always think, because I played a good bit, I hurled a good bit and played football as well. I think it makes such a difference. It's no surprise to me that, like, the likes of a Sean O'Brien, Rob Kearney, you know, I suppose Tommy Bowe was a good footballer and a hurler and that as well. Or not a good footballer. I think Tiernan O'Halloran as well. There's loads of guys across rugby that have played Gaelic games. I think it makes a massive difference to you. I think you get a great appreciation of space and how to use it and different people around you. Do you find that yourself? Because I think you look like a natural footballer to me.
Yeah, I think I definitely would have to agree with you. Even just for hand-eye coordination, like, it's massive as well, you know, kind of just in terms of fielding in Gaelic football and being able to take a ball. And just if you become good at that, it's almost just feeds into rugby then as well, just in terms of having a good pair of hands, which certainly comes in handy as a forward.
And again, just on your own game, sorry, I know we're going into the nitty gritty here. We try not to do this, and we try and keep it light enough. But just in terms of, like, say, what I really noticed, that a big thing that I suppose I didn't before you'd headed off to the Scarlets, was your ability on the ground. I mean, was there a coach that's kind of helped you with that, or is it something that you've just kind of stumbled into? I mean, you just seem to have got superb, especially for a tall guy, great technique in there. You mean your turnovers, they were a big, I think that the Scarlets have actually really, really missed it. But Munster, I think, have really gained something there, because it's super for turnover for backs. I mean, is it something, who coached you on that, or is it just something that you've kind of fallen into and you've gotten better at?
Yeah, I can't really pinpoint it, to be honest. I've probably been asked this question a few times, and I can never really put it down to anything in particular. It's probably just something I've done kind of from a younger age, from as long as I can remember, and kind of, you know, once you kind of get a taste for it, you enjoy getting a turnover, so you kind of you get a bit hungry to get a few more turnovers. So just for as long as I can remember, I've always been one to kind of go after the ball a bit. And seems to be working.
And I guess after a match, Tyke, what's the kind of numbers you like to look at to maybe give yourself an indication of how well you've played? Because I guess a player like yourself, you know, you carry a lot of ball, you get a lot of turnovers, and then in the second row, you know, you're involved in the line-out as well, you're making tackles. Like, which one of those do you look at first to say, okay, this is hit my target for today?
I don't know if I'd look at numbers, really. Obviously, I do like if the turnover numbers is quite high. Kind of, if that's high, then I know I've probably done something right. But I suppose just kind of having a feel when it came out, if you come off the field, like whether you've played well or not, you know. And sometimes you just know you haven't played well, and the numbers when you go and look at them probably prove that. Being honest, over the weekend I felt like I had a poor game, and when I went back and had a look, and I know myself I didn't play well. So, you know, kind of, you just have a feeling when you come off, you know, whether you've done well or not.
And as well, just when we're talking about your own game, I hate to keep coming back because I'm always fascinated with this stuff, but just in terms of, like, you know, getting the best out of yourself, I remember myself, I always had a few things when I was playing where I was like, geez, you know, this year I really want to make a big push to get better at whatever it is, passing off, passing under pressure because I'd like to make a move into the centre, whatever it may be. Is there something in your game at the moment that you're saying, do you know what, if I want to nail down a place in the Irish team, have you picked something in your game? You're saying, I really want to tighten this up for the coming season, especially the season that's in it with the World Cup?
I'd probably call in line-outs would be one of the big ones for me at the moment in terms of just, you know, I was kind of backup caller in Scarlett's and Aaron Munster. I know Billy playing, starting with me, he's going to call because he's a bit of a line-out. He is a line-out guru, so you kind of want him to be calling. So I'm just kind of trying to learn off him. And, you know, when I do get the opportunities to call line-outs, I think that will add to my game massively as well.
And have you talked to any guys? Because I know, I mean, obviously, you've Dunnock O'Callaghan is still kind of around the setup. But when you came over initially, like, had you had any conversation with Paul O'Connell or anyone like that to try and, or I presume Gerry Flannery would be really knowledgeable on the line-out stuff. Is there anyone you've kind of sought out to say, do you know what, you know, is there what did you do to get really good at this, or is kind of Billy been your go-to guy?
No, I haven't really sat down with anyone and kind of just feeding off. You know, Billy would kind of almost lead a lot of Munster lineouts in terms of that. But like if I'm calling 1 week, I have occasionally gone to him and gotten his opinion on something and seen what he thinks about it, and which is a great asset to have.
And I mean, how do you get better at it if you're like, same with Billy, if Billy's playing every week, how do you get better at that, Ty? Do you need time in the middle? Do you need time calling under pressure where you've got, you know, your 5 minutes to go, you know, you're on your own line, they're whatever, two or three points behind, you need to win the line. Are they the moments that bring you on, do you think?
Yeah, I think they obviously have massive impact. I suppose you can like do all the video you want, and like I do a lot of video, and I'll think of different lineouts and all that kind of stuff, but nothing's probably gonna be the same as the pressure of playing, like having to call in a lineout, especially if you are losing a game and you're 10 meters from the line, you have to win the ball. That's a lot different to going up against opposition in training, you know, and practicing that way. But you know, with Billy and obviously Colin when he's playing, I obviously back up caller, so I need to be prepared no matter what. And if he goes off, I'm going to be calling. So, you know, those are the moments that I just need to be ready for. And I'm sure I will be calling over the next couple of weeks.
And sorry, we've delved into your Munster experience a lot and your Scots experience, but how have you found the step up to international level and working with Joe Schmidt and being in the Irish camp? I'd imagine it was a bit of a step up when you first got in there. Do you feel like you're kind of up to speed now, or are you, I don't know if you're ever up to speed when Joe Schmidt is head coach?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, when I went over to Australia the first, you know, week or two, I put a lot of pressure on myself just to get up to speed with everything, especially the fact that I'm kind of covering the two roles with six and lock. So the first 2 weeks was almost double intense than it probably usually is, because I was coming not knowing anything. Whereas going into camp there in November, I was a lot familiar with the calls, and getting up to speed was a lot easier for me. And you know, you enjoy it a lot more when you're comfortable. And I definitely found November I was kind of up to speed, and I was a little bit more comfortable in terms of the calling and the system for sure.
And I guess a lot of people were hoping to see you in the squad to play the All Blacks, that famous win. I know you just missed out. Like, do you know if you were in the mix? Were you close? Do you know how close you were to being involved?
Yeah, look, I like to think I was close.
I've been in that position a few times, Si. You've got to feel like you were close. Otherwise, you drive yourself mental. Go on, anyway, sorry.
I travelled as 24th, and I experienced the whole thing. But you got to look at this as well. People may have been saying I should have started, but it was a massive game for the country, and as well as people may have thought I played, you've also got a Lions player, and Dev Toner's there, and James Ryan, who's, if we're being honest, probably the best lock in the world right now. So those guys aren't too shabby rugby players either. So I can't be too frustrated either, especially when they've proven themselves for Ireland time and time again and got into such a big game. Joe decided to go with them, so that was just the way it was.
And what are the hopes for the year ahead? I mean, you've picked, the line-out call as a thing you really want to improve. Do you feel like if you get that to a level, you might be able to say, well, look, Joe, like, do you feel like your conversation with Joe could go differently where you say, well, look, I really feel like I'm doing this well. I think I've got all the numbers to back it up. We look at the Munster line-out, all the rest of the stuff in my game that I've continued to do well. Like, in that case then, are you going and having a real good conversation with Joe to say, listen, why aren't you picking me? You're probably in a different place than you are at the moment,
Yeah, for sure. I think it will obviously add a massive aspect to my game and give more of a reason to be selected, And going forward, it should give me a bit more opportunities to be involved in the Irish squads, especially the big games. And, all I can do is just keep my head down and keep playing as well as I can play. And then if it's good enough, it's good enough. If it's not, then there's not much more I can do. But if Joe wants me to go away and improve on something else, then that's what I'll go away and do. But, at the end of the day, it's his decision, who he feels is the right man for the job in that moment. So whoever he selects.
And Ty, just before we let you go, I've one last question for you, and I'm really grateful for you giving us so much time. How close are we realistically for this conversation never having to have happened, in the sense that you wouldn't have turned down the Scarlets contract and said, okay, I can't play for Leinster anymore, maybe it's time for me to move on with my life?
Very close. It probably might have been selling one of you guys a house soon.
Baby, don't go. Jesus.
It was that close.
Yeah. No, I was, well, I've half a master's done, so I probably would have finished that off and went into property, yeah.
Interesting. Property mogul. I'll keep an eye out for you. Listen, I'm working on the bank, so if you need a mortgage, give me a call, all right? on a serious note, it was fantastic to get you on. I know it's a busy week for you guys. We wish you the best of luck on the weekend. It was a clean sweep for the Irish provinces on the weekend. We're hoping for another one this weekend. Great to have you back in the country, and hopefully we'll see you, knocking on that Irish door, maybe getting a few more caps in Six Nations, getting on that plane at the end of the year, okay?
Fingers crossed. Cheers, Luke.
Thanks, Dyke.
Cheers, Dyke.
That's all we have time for this week on The Left Wing. We will be back next week with another great podcast, and in the meantime, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or listen on independent.ie. So until next week, thank you for listening, and goodbye.